Hi there, folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Zeb Nakajima again. Hope you're feeling well and refreshed and that things have returned to some semblance of normality, at least, wherever you're tuning in from. Here in Japan, as I've mentioned last time, things are kind of going back to normal. Schools have opened again in most parts of the country, as have shopping centers and most other businesses. However, we've already seen a slight jump, at least, in infection numbers, as was to be expected, including a few clusters in Tokyo, Kitakyushu, which is a nearby city here in Fukuoka Prefecture, and a few other spots. Here in Fukuoka City, schools have decided to slightly reduce their operating hours again as a result, and we're still advised to avoid crowded and closed spaces if we can at all, and of course to avoid close contact of any kind. Bit difficult to do if you're commuting to work in a crowded Japanese train, but whatever. Anyway, we're still vigilant, as you should all be, of course, and hoping for the best. Not much to do, really, except keep our eyes open and, again, remain vigilant. Now, one important housekeeping item before we dive right into it. You may have noticed that our theme music has changed a month or so ago, and while the music is distributed freely for use for any purpose, or at least that's what the composer noted when he uploaded it to the music distribution website that I've downloaded it from, we, of course, want to credit him and maybe to hear a bit more about him so we can at least offer him some publicity in exchange for using his lovely intellectual property. However, he seems to have disappeared off the face of the planet, or at least he hasn't been responding to our inquiries through that music download center, as well as through his record label contact form, nor has he responded to my Twitter mention and message to him, which was the other way he originally said he could be contacted. So I just thought I'll at least let you know who he is again. So our new theme music is by Kevin Hartnell of Overlook Hotel Records. And if you like it, there's plenty more where that came from. Look him up. You won't be disappointed. Okay, so for today's episode, if you've been tuning in for a while, you've probably heard us talk on quite a few occasions about holiday properties and more specifically ski properties, which are some of the more popular ones which can be bought fairly cheaply in Japan. You've probably also heard us speak about the option to lease properties for short periods of time, thereby making some extra money on them, and also leaving them available for your own personal use. And that's possible as long as you make sure that you don't step on any toes in the process. And you've already probably heard us mention again and again that it can be quite challenging to handle the purchasing, management, and selling of properties in Japan if you're not here, are not Japanese, or at least do not are not fluent in the language, without local representation for various reasons. And you've obviously heard us mention time and time again that there are no limitations on foreigners buying property in Japan as opposed to the rest of the Asia-Pacific region. Now, all of these above topics are seemingly unrelated topics that can come into play in various scenarios and various aspects of the property purchase and ownership lifecycle for resident or even for non-resident foreigners here. And that's why I found the following business call that I had this week absolutely priceless, because it just ties all of these issues together beautifully. And while it starts off sounding like a bit of a horror story from the buyer's perspective, fear not, there is a happy ending there. So bear with it to the very end. I won't say any more than that. I'll leave you to enjoy it. I definitely love this call, at least. And I will see you again on the other side. Okay, go for it. So tell me a little bit about your particular situation there.
Oh, okay. As you know, I've been working in Asia for the last few years, and the nature of my work visa means that I was coming to Japan every 3 months or so. Yep. For basically visa runs, and also I come to Japan every year. I was coming to Japan every year, coming from Australia. I love the snow and you know, skiing and snowboarding in Australia is a really big thing. So, I was in Japan every year for a couple of months, during the Christmas, New Year's for snowboarding. So, I found out that there were properties available for purchase by overseas. You know, I could purchase properties in Japan, even though I'm not a resident in Japan.
Yep.
And I don't have a Japanese residency visa, but I could still purchase properties in Japan as an Australian citizen. And then the price, the, you know, the prices of some of secondhand properties in Japan, it's like they'll it's crazy. Honestly, it was crazy. So I purchased a couple of resort condos.
Yep.
At a ski resort in Japan, ski resort area in Japan. Not really as an investment. It's more of, well, it was because I bought them because of the fact that I'm in Japan so often, and it, you know, it gave me a place to stay, and also because the area I'm living in, the area I bought in, it has all the lifestyle amenities, you know, that I really love: skiing, onsen. It's a natural environment. It's safe. The food, the air, everything is great. So, you know, when I need to come to Japan on my visa runs, or when I have a break from work, it's like the perfect place. And then, of course, the transport here was also very good.
Is there much?
All those factors combined.
Is there much happening there in other seasons as well, or is it mostly a winter?
So the area I'm at is Yuzawa. It's a place called Ichigo Yuzawa, which is about an hour and a half by Shinkansen from Tokyo. I've been here in summer and winter. In wintertime, yeah, it's packed. Lots of snowboarding, lots of skiing from December until March. Right. March, April, there's even still snow. In summertime, it's very, very different. You could say the city is pretty, like, the area is very, very quiet, except for the weekends. There seems to be a lot of people that come up here for hiking, A lot of people come up here for bicycle riding.
Okay, like a day trip kind of thing?
Yeah, day trips, weekend trips are quite popular. Well, of course, this year, because of Corona, it's been the town's pretty much shut down. But previously, like last summer, weekends were quite busy. Weekends in the spring and summer were quite relatively busy.
Yeah.
And then, there's also like a music festival here in the summer. Called Fuji Rock. And then the town is like packed out again for those 3-4 days.
Yep.
And also, like, during the summertime, there are a lot of fireworks going on. So, you know, wintertime's like the main time when everyone comes up here. Well, the main time when most foreigners come up here for skiing and snowboarding. But during the summer and springtime, there seems to be a lot of, local Japanese people and families that come up here for hiking and the weekend getaways.
That's
it's
good
nice.
To know.
It's really nice.
We've got customers who've purchased there, but they're, really wintertime tourists, so I don't really know much about the area in other seasons, so that's good to know.
Yeah. Oh, well, in my building, in my building, in my area, there were a lot of foreigners that purchased apartments here. Most of them, though, expat families that work in Tokyo, that they'll come up here for the weekend, or they come up here for winters, but they mainly work in Tokyo, and then they come up here with their families. This is like their, family, secondary family home. My understanding is that, living in Tokyo, the housing and everything in Tokyo is quite congested, so their escape is to come up here, because the condos here are relatively much larger than what you get in Tokyo.
Yep.
The average size of apartments here are about 50 square meters or so.
Yeah.
But most of the expats I know here who have families have purchased apartments here, which are about 70 square meters. And they have like pool, gym, onsen. So it's a really good place, to live with a family, basically.
Okay. So you've purchased there and you've been using it just for your own purposes, or have you been leasing it out as well?
Yeah. So I purchased two apartments here, thinking whether it would be possible. Well, thinking that I would possibly rent out one apartment during the winter time. You know, if I wanted to use the apartment in winter, which I did, but I also wanted to get some income to cover the relatively high management fees. However, the issue is that a lot of the buildings here, when you purchase the properties, they have as a clause of purchase, as a part of the building property rule, that you can't short-term lease.
Correct.
Yes, that's a big issue. Now, I didn't understand how serious and how difficult the situation is, but there was a Japanese investor who purchased 5 or 6 properties in the same building, and they, you know, they wanted to Airbnb, and they actually somehow got an Airbnb permission. They got a hotel permission.
Yep.
And the condo board has now taken them to court to fight that. So,
well, the legislation,
it's a very serious thing.
Yeah. The legislation changed in mid 2018. They've given building management companies and the owners co-ops the authority to prohibit this.
Yeah.
So even if somebody had a license, even from before, the license might not be officially cancelled, but the building management company can definitely tell them to stop.
Yeah, which was, I was surprised about that. You know, to be honest, I was very surprised that, in a sense, the building co-op has a lot of power. I'm fine with it. You know, when in Rome, do as the Romans do. But seeing, wow, it's, and then I've gone to a few co-op meetings where a lot of the local Japanese, they are very angry. Like, they really do not want short-term leasing in resort condos.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Even though it's really affecting, it really affects the property values, the resale values of these buildings.
Oh, the whole economy of the town. I mean, these are tourist towns, right? Like the idea of not allowing tourists to rent in the town is just preposterous. But Japan's old-fashioned that way.
I mean, I can understand. Being an owner here, I can understand from both perspectives. You know, having lots of strange, like what they say, strange guests who no one knows anything about coming in and possibly damaging the property, you know, which all the owners then have to pay for repairs and everything. I can understand that. At the same time, wow, being in a resort town where the economy is primarily based on tourism and not being, and, you know, pretty much not having any short-term leasing, and the hotel, you know, the hotel options here are very limited as well. But so I think that's why most of the people that come to my area, they are, you know, they're only here for a weekend. Luckily, the Shinkansen is very good. There's 2 Shinkansen here, so the transport here is very convenient and good. But, I was surprised. I'll be honest with you, I was surprised. The stance that, you know, the... sort of like, may I say, civil war that's going on in my building. it's a very cultural thing as well. I think that, you know, in my building it's half owned by foreigners, half owned by local Japanese. I find that the foreigners are more open to, short-term leasing, Airbnb, things like that.
Yeah.
Whereas the local... the Japanese, and I can understand their position. I mean, you know, they bought these properties during the bubble era, you know, when the properties were super expensive. Obviously, you know, the foreigners are more open to short-term leasing for the investment sake, whereas the original Japanese owners, they're totally against it. And the reason I'm really surprised is during the... building condo meetings where they discuss the annual meeting. You know, Japanese and Japan are very polite and well-mannered. Well, those meetings got very heated.
Really?
Lots of swearing. I've never seen Japanese swearing and telling, you know, the other Japanese Airbnb investor to literally swearing, get out of this building, get out of this town. It was really heated.
Did you
I'm glad to say be out of it.
Did you not know this when you purchased? Was not that not a, did you not know that about these restrictions when you purchased the properties?
I knew there were restrictions on Airbnb. And to be honest, I'm not too fussed because I wasn't really looking to get any money, or make money from short, you know, Airbnb or things like that. What I was thinking though is, you know, when I have friends or business colleagues or clients from, you know, Hong Kong, China, Asia, they'd love to come to Japan. And I was thinking at that time, well, you know, if I have two places, I have, which happens, you know, I can short-term lease to my friends, my colleagues, my, you know, other family members.
Well, that should still be doable, no? I mean, you can.
That's what I thought.
Not the rent part. Yeah. I mean, that would be between you and them. But you're allowed to let your friends and family stay there, right?
Yes, I'm allowed to let my friends and family stay there. But because of this court case that's now going on between the building management and you know, the Airbnb guy, the police got involved. That's why I can't believe how serious it got. You know, the local police got involved, and they're now doing an investigation of who's been renting, who hasn't been renting, and sending, you know, warning notes and things like that. Mm-hmm. So, if I have friends or cousins, you know, clients, or family that stay here, I want them to, you know, if they're staying here for a while, I want them to be contributing to the electricity costs and things like that, right?
Yeah, somebody comes knocking on their door to ask them what they're doing there and how they got there is not pleasant, is it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And, you know, if they get warning letters and they, you know, have to explain that they're, you know, my family or my friends, it's really difficult. You know, it's not ideal for me. Mm-hmm. But luckily, you know, I didn't really purchase the property as an investment, as a rental investment vehicle. It was more for my own enjoyment and my own use. I was actually hoping in the future that position would change in order for the my investment, you know, my property investment to, you know, have more options in terms of capital appreciation and in terms of, you know, rental income. But to be honest, I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't think so, no. I mean, even if it could just cover the monthly fees, that would be good. But we've seen it getting worse, not better. I got to be honest with you.
It's getting worse and not better. You're totally right.
Yeah.
You're totally right. I may have looked into this a bit more carefully. Probably I would have just gotten one property if I knew the situation would be like this. I'm still very glad that it's a wonderful place and the price was amazing. And it's a wonderful building and the community is really great. So I don't regret making the purchase, but management fees can be quite high in these buildings.
Yeah.
They're
usually about $200-$300 a month each, right?
No. I've got a 50 square meter. That's about $300 US.
Yep.
Yeah. $300 US a month. And then I've got a 70 square meter, a larger 70 square meter.
Oh,
that's about $600.
Oh, wow.
US a month.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, more about $400-$500. But when you add in, it's not only the management fee, you have the repair fund have to contribute to, which is quite expensive. And I've got to say, the electricity and water costs here are quite high.
In the countryside, they are, yeah.
Yeah, in the countryside, yeah. Mm. And I tell you, there's no insulation here, it's pretty poor. So you pretty much, unless you get double glazing and stuff done, which I know a lot of people have, wow, their gas bills add up really quickly. I think I had one month, during the dead of winter, most people get a gas bill of about $200 US a month. Oh.
So what's the plan moving forward? What are you going to do with them?
So it's still quite, I mean, moving forward, I might sell off the larger apartment.
Yeah.
I might sell off the larger apartment, you know, because I really can't justify, it's only me, so I don't really need two apartments.
Mm.
And keep the smaller apartment just to enjoy myself, when I need to come back into Japan for during my visa runs or short work breaks, or when I come here for snowboarding. I'll probably keep the smaller. Also, the smaller one, the building management fees, because they're charged by square footage, the building management fee is much more reasonable.
Yeah.
And repair fee is much more reasonable. And, you know, being one person, I don't use up the whole space of the larger apartment.
Yeah.
And also the heating and electricity costs. For example, I've got two inbuilt gas heaters on the larger room compared to one. So my gas bill in the larger room is basically doubled.
Okay.
I'll probably keep the smaller one, but sell the larger one. Right now, it's not urgent. Because, you know, right now we're in spring summer. So I heard this is if I'm selling in spring summer, it's really, the prices are significantly lower. And a lot of people, I've noticed in this area, wintertime, people don't really sell properties in winter. All the families use the property during wintertime. And as soon as spring summer comes, then they sell them off.
Yeah, it's also a bit of a problem for agents to bring people up there to have a look in the winter.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah, accessibility can sometimes be an issue. Not everybody can and does have the... because agents like to take people over by car, but if they don't have the facilities to drive around there, it's a bit more difficult.
That's interesting. Because I have noticed... because I talked to my agent that he said that he mostly sells all his properties in the spring and summertime.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So how can we help? What did you need? Obviously, we can't help you with tenants. I'm sorry about that.
That's fine. When I purchased the property, I tried to research as much as possible. The one thing I didn't take into account was how to manage the property post-purchase. What I mean by that is, in Australia, in Hong Kong, in China, when you purchase a property, it's relatively simple to, get utilities set up, to get a property agent to help manage your property and to get bills paid. What I didn't realize is in Japan, it's much more difficult.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is, for example, my monthly building management fee and repair fund contribution, in Australia, in Hong Kong, they'll send me an invoice and I'll, pay it by my card, or I'll do a bank transfer.
They'll email you an invoice, you mean?
And they'll email me again. Yeah. They'll email or mail me an invoice.
No, that doesn't happen here.
It doesn't happen here.
No.
It just didn't occur to me.
I'm so sorry about this, mate.
Yeah. And so for my building, they only do direct debit for building management and...
from a Japanese account.
Repair fund. Yeah, from a Japanese bank account. In order to get a Japanese bank account, I need to have a Japanese residency visa, do you mention?
Yep.
So even though I can purchase a property... So the irony is, it's very easy to purchase a property here as a tourist, but it's very difficult to pay any of your bills. So that's no problem. I thought I would find a real estate agent who could, you know, in Australia or wherever or Hong Kong, you just find a real estate agent and they'll handle it for you.
Yeah.
Most of the real estate agents that I talk to, they only handle properties in Tokyo, Osaka, major cities.
Yep.
They don't deal in countryside, let's say, in areas, which I was very surprised.
This gap that you run across between the official country policy and the practical on-the-ground practices is exactly the reason that we've been in business.
You're pretty much the only guys, I think, that deal with this. Because, I've contacted a few property management companies in Tokyo, everywhere. Tokyo, Osaka, Japanese companies with branch offices in Hong Kong.
Yep.
No one, pretty much they say they can't handle it or they've referred me to you. That's how I was able to get your. Well, but to be honest, I knew about you from your blogs, which were very useful. So when I was doing my research to purchase a property, I was listening to your blogs. I should have listened more, obviously. So most of the property companies in Tokyo basically referred me to you to discuss how to handle the practicalities of owning a property in Japan.
So we can do all of this. That's what we do for our clients on a regular basis. What we're going to do is we're going to be, you're going to give us authority to act in Japan on your behalf.
Okay.
And then we're going to be the contact person for the building management company and the tax department and anybody else that can't, you know, wrap their heads around sending statements overseas or receiving money from overseas.
Yeah, okay, awesome. Because the other issue I've been having is that with the building management, with my utilities, my electricity and my gas, they don't send bills overseas. They don't even email bills. No. They send a card that to my building, which I then need to go to 7-Eleven. They don't have online payment facilities,
correct,
which is really, that's my head in. So I have to go to 7-Eleven. The issue is, if I'm not in Japan, I can't pay for my gas. I can't pay for my electricity. I call them up, and it's very, no one speaks Japanese, and no one speaks English. I know I'm in Japan. I need to know Japanese. But it's very difficult as an English foreign speaker to totally have no English contacts with the utility company as well.
Yeah.
I can't even explain my situation because they don't speak English when you call up the helpline. Yeah.
Same goes for City Hall and the tax department in most places as well.
Yeah. So, you know, if you could assist me handling these sort of day-to-day issues, I'd be very grateful.
We can definitely do that. We charge basically 1 hour monthly fee for that.
Okay, yeah, no worries.
Which is 2,800 yen plus tax, so about 30 US.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
And then once a year, if you need us, I'm assuming you also need us to receive and handle your property tax payments.
Yep.
So that's one extra hour once a year.
Okay. Yep. No worries.
In your case, because we haven't actually handled the purchase and we're just taking over from whatever you've got in place there, we'll just need to charge for whatever it takes us to set up everything to go to us.
Okay, perfect. May I also ask, this is in relation to property tax. Now, in my area, if you reside in the property, I think it's a minimum of like 4 or 5 months, or one of the properties is regarded as your primary residence in Japan.
Yeah.
You're allowed a discount on the annual property tax, I believe.
That discount is only because you're supposed to be paying municipal taxes, though. It's a credit for the municipal taxes that you pay. So,
okay.
I don't think that's not gonna give you any discount overall. If you do declare this to be your residence, and you'll start paying municipal taxes, though.
Oh, okay. I understand. Okay, that's very good to know. You're very on the ball with this. Thank you.
No worries.
Because all of this information, to be honest, is very hard to find. when they give you the property purchase contract, and they do go, I mean, I had a lawyer with me as well.
Yeah.
You know, they go through all the taxes that you'll need to pay, all the bills, all the different building management fees, repair fund that you need to pay.
Yeah.
But they don't really go through the intricacies of this. I don't really even know if they know it. No one tells you this, like the day-to-day practicalities of owning the property in Japan. No one really, as a foreigner, no one really knows.
Well,
no one
in
really
large goes through part, this. In large part, it's true. They simply don't know it. It's unfortunately the case. And a lot of people have local friends or acquaintances in Japan that can just be their contact person for that sort of thing.
Yes, that's what I've been doing. You know, I've been getting friends. You know, I was using a company from Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend, the bills basically got sent to my friend, and then I would deposit money into his account, and then, you know, the electricity, he would send it to me, and then I'd give him money if I was in Japan to go to the 7-Eleven.
There's a limit to what you can ask friends to do, though, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't want to be, you know, well... I want to have something because he might be moving soon.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I have to find, I'm in a position where, wow, I have to suddenly find a company another friend who can handle it. And, you know, sometimes it's not easy. In Japan, you know, to know fluent Japanese residents and fluent Japanese speakers and residents who are willing to help you out like this.
Yeah, well, we're happy to give you a happy ending to the horror story there.
awesome, thank you.
When it's time to sell the properties as well, is your agent there able to help you with that? Does he speak English?
This is the other issue. The agents in my local area, his English is passable. But basically, when I was doing the property transaction, I basically had to hire a translator,
interpreter.
I had to hire an English-speaking lawyer to translate.
Yeah.
Because basically, his English is very basic.
Yeah.
Very basic. So in order to get anything done, I basically needed to have a translator. And that was what, you know, when I purchased a property here, that was one of the requirements. You know, it's the other unusual aspect of purchasing a property out here was there were all these requirements that I needed to fulfill before they even considered putting in my application to purchase the property.
Yeah.
So, there were all these requirements, such as I needed to have a local Japanese lawyer, no problem, but I also needed to have a local Japanese translator to translate everything for me, and I needed to have all my correspondence, all my email, everything translated into Japanese before I replied. The actual property purchase was not the easiest as a non-Japanese fluent speaker. But luckily I had a English speaking lawyer to help me. But in my time in Japan, you can pretty much assume no one speaks English. In no companies, the agents, the utility company, the judicial scrivener, no one spoke English. You pretty much have to get your own. I had to get my own English speaking. I was very lucky to get my own English speaking lawyer.
Okay, well, when it does come time to sell one or both of them, just let us know, because I think you'll find that having us represent you for that might be a bit cheaper than a lawyer.
Perfect. I'd really appreciate that. That's perfect. Thank you so much.
No problem at all. So I guess the next stage would be I'll send you the engagement forms, which I'll need you to have signed. Are you in Australia at the moment?
No, because of Corona, I'm in Japan.
Oh, okay. You're stuck.
I'm in Japan. Yeah, right in the property now, which was a good thing because, you know, I'm actually, you know, these properties are like 30 years old. I've renovated one of the units, and now I'm renovating the other one, what they call reforming the other unit now.
Okay, and you don't have Japanese residency, so I'm assuming you don't have a Jumihyo and the Hanko and all of that, right?
Yeah, no, I don't. I had to go back to Australia to get a notarized affidavit of signature, which has allowed me to use my signature in legal documents.
Okay, so do you have that? That's a big help. Have you got that?
I do. Okay. I do. Yeah, I've got that. I literally had to fly back to Australia to get it because the Australian consulate doesn't notarize.
Yeah, they stopped.
Any documents used in Japan.
Yes, they've stopped doing that about a couple of years ago, I think.
Oh, it's really difficult.
Okay, so that affidavit will probably be what we need for you to be able to give us authority to act on your behalf. So if you could send me a scan of that one.
Yep, no problem.
And I'll send you the forms that we need signed, and hopefully your signature will be sufficient with that affidavit.
Yep.
And
how do I get you copies of my property title documents and things like that?
And we don't need the actual title. We will need the registration document and everything else that you've got from building management. So the building rules and regulations book and so forth.
Yep. Okay.
So either a scan of that, or if you wish, I mean, we normally hold the original documents on behalf of our customers here too. So except the title deed, which we'd prefer not to hold on your behalf.
Because I got told that the title deed has like a number on it.
Correct.
That you're supposed to keep secret, and if you ever lose that number and someone else gets it, they can basically buy and sell your property.
It is officially true. You can roll it back once you prove that it's been a fraud, or and you can pay money to have it reissued, so it's not all that horrible. But yes, that's essentially that's true. But yeah, aside from the title deed, if you want us to just file your documents and keep them in the office and send them to you whenever you want us to, we can do that as well. And then in that case, just send us a package with all of that.
Okay, it might be easier. Yep. To be honest, it might be easier if you guys keep a copy of not a copy. If you guys keep those actual documents on your end,
it'll just
make things a lot easier. And I think, to be honest, a lot safer.
No problem. Just don't put the title deed in there. We don't want that. Okay.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
No worries. So you send me that affidavit, I'll send you the engagement forms, and we'll take it from there.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Liv. I really appreciate your assistance and taking the time to go through this with me, and thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Have a great day.
You too.
Have a great day. Great week ahead.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. So there you have it. All's well that ends well. We've happily stepped in and offered to rescue the book, and things should be progressing a bit more smoothly for him from now on. But I think it really helps explain the various pitfalls and challenges that many first-time buyers face when they first enter this market, and why it's really important to A, do the proper research, and B, just having someone who's strictly on your side, helping you navigate all of these challenges and representing you in a professional capacity. For all of the reasons you've just heard, I really don't need to add anything to that. So that's it from us for today, folks. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Do share it with your networks or anyone who might find it interesting. And as always, we would love it if you could take a moment of your time and leave us a star rating, or even better, a short worded review in the iTunes store. We would love to hear what you think. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, from all of us here at NTI, have a great day or night or weekend. Yoroshiku!